It is the Batter Up Podcast for the 27th of May, or at least parts after the 27th of May. We record on the Wednesday after the Tuesday, where Major League Baseball has submitted its second round of proposals for the players, and let's just say it was met with some of the similar acrimony that the first one was meant for. Will Pelagic, Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson here with you on Batter Up, a radio.com, a 92.9 The Game exclusive. Say hello to my two cohorts. Hello, Joe Patrick.
Willie P.
Hello, Caleb Johnson.
Happy birthday to the legend, Andre Three Stacks.
Love it. Love how we get started out on a good note.
I had to get in there.
I appreciate that. I'm a big fan of Andre Three Stacks. Big fan of Outkast. The whole bit. Why not? All right. So I'm gonna start with Joe because I know Joe's bringing in a lot of the optimism, and I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people are trying to sit here and carry the water for Major League Baseball and say this is okay. This is how negotiations go and whatnot. But I'm sorry, man. Like, this is getting out of freaking hand. And the more and more I hear from players, I just want to say stop. You're getting dragged into this by the owners on purpose. Anything you say is not helping you. I feel like Major League Baseball players are like the drunk dude at the bar who's been beaten to death in the fight, and they don't know when to stop. It's like, dude, the fight is over. There's no way you can look good by doing this.
Am I wrong? No, I mean, I do agree with that. Like, the players are kind of getting themselves into something that, like, it just whenever they retaliate verbally, it's just never a good look, you know? Like you said it perfectly. Like, it's exactly kind of what the owners want, and it's not going to benefit them. I know it's a natural reaction to have. Like, I get it. I get that, like, when you're upset about something, you want to react in a certain way. But, you know, you just got to try to kind of keep your head as even as possible, because that's going to be the best way for you to negotiate.
Well, here's the problem. And Caleb, I think you spoke to this a little bit on one of our previous podcasts, is that, number one, the owners have never negotiated in good faith. And number two, there is no faith on those who report in baseball for them to actually stand up and stick up for the player's side, because they don't want to jeopardize relationships with these teams and these owners. And so the players feel the need to speak up for themselves, Caleb. But in my mind, I feel like enough of this stuff is being leaked out by the league, and the league thinks it's good. But any rational person can see the players have a legitimate beef. Just let other people say it.
Yeah, it is tough, because when we look back at other player negotiations that have happened in the past, this is really the first time where I know so many people off there are talking about, you know, this age of social media where people can say whatever they want. But it does play into this, whereas before, you know, a previous player negotiations, it was a reporter reaching out to a player or a player reaching out to a reporter in order to make a statement. And there was some think before you speak taking place. And now, because we have Twitter and because we have Twitch, there's just a lot less of that. It's more so dangerous on Twitch because you're doing something else. And so you're just off the top, you know, just spitting out whatever happens to be on your mind. At least with Twitter, you're having to physically write it out. And so then maybe there's a little bit of edit, but still we're getting players responding where it's just like, yeah, at this point, you know, at this point, Marcus Stroman, you telling us that you're working on your life after baseball projects is not what anyone wants to hear. It's just, The owners are always going to have the upper hand because they are the face, or they are directly connected with the team, and people have this love for their team. Even though they do love players, their love for the team is usually higher, and the fact that the owners are getting out what they want first, and the counter to it is players crying about money. And of course, and with everything that's going on right now, just no one wants to hear that.
I think also, too, and even I even heard this talked about by Mark Reynolds. He was on Sirius XM Radio talking with Chris Mad Dog Russo yesterday. And he said, you know, look, you know, it just comes down to a lot of math. You know, we had already agreed to take half. We're going to play half the games. And even if the gate makes up 40% of the revenue, where's the rest of the 60% of the revenue? Look, if we have to operate at a loss, why can't the owners operate, you know, at a loss? I mean, I understand the owners, their job is to try and make money for themselves, but nobody's making money right now. And my biggest question is, why does this seem to be a problem here, and yet we're not hearing about these discussions in any of these other leagues? Like, NASCAR started back up without really any fanfare. The NHL put out its return to play format yesterday, and money's not the holdup. It's okay, logistics and trying to work out things with host cities. The NFL, while they've had discussions, and the NFLPA has said, we don't have a return to play format yet, you know, let's just chill. I don't think people necessarily envision that those two sides aren't going to have a mutual best interest to get football back on the field.
So I had a kind of a I don't want to call it a moment of genius, because I don't want to give myself credit. Ooh. Like that, but
I'm ready.
How about this? Let me float you guys this idea, this idea that's been rattling around my brain. So Rob Manfred went on CNN what, a week and a half ago, and the main thing to me that he was saying was that the teams don't have the cash flow available on hand to pay these players what they want to be paid, or what they agreed to be paid with fans in the stadium, which is these prorated salaries, right?
Points seated, yes.
And so, to me, that's the reason why we got this escalating wage cut structure, was because you drastically cut the wages, the biggest wages in baseball. And that saves you the most money. It just provides the most cash available for you to pay out. Why don't they stack on deferred payments to get them up to those prorated salaries over a period of time? Say, within 5 years, like, we will pay you to get you to that prorated salary. But in the meantime, to keep the available cash flow available for us to operate, let's start at these levels. It makes most sense for us to drastically cut the highest paid players, and we will get you the money of your prorated salary over a certain amount of time. That would solve the liquidity issue, and it would also solve, or it would lean into, these billion-dollar valuations that these clubs have, which has been touted by everybody when we've been talking about this millionaires versus billionaires thing. It would allow them to kind of leverage the value of their club over a period of time, because the clubs aren't in a state of, like, being insolvent, right? Like, the value of these teams is astronomical, so let them use that to their advantage, but you can also kind of keep cash flowing that way at the same time. I really like the idea of deferred payments, and it seems to me like that's what the players want too, and I think that honestly it makes the most sense.
So that, I feel like, is acting in a bit of what I would call good faith, the deferred payment style, because look, we're going to get you your money, but it's just going to take a little bit longer because of everything that's happened. I feel like the players could accept that. What it seems like the owners are trying to do is this whole idea of, well, we'll pay you this lower salary, but we'll give you a bunch of bonuses, like this whole $200 million playoff bonus thing that's going on. Although it something didn't seem right about that, and I finally, reading a couple of different guys, it clicked that they pointed out that Major League Baseball is maybe playing a little bit of, hey, what if the virus comes back in a second wave and we never get to the playoffs, and so then we don't have to pay that money, which just, it makes me kind of go back and be like, wow, they're playing it really dirty there.
Well, they're banking on that playoff revenue, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what's going to help provide the funding for all this. And if they don't get that, then I think that's what they're trying to hedge against. That's the way I read it.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Just to play the players' side of it, and again, the devil's advocate, it's not my fault that you guys are insolvent. Like, that's or that you guys don't have cash flow.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they're not like many soccer leagues going on in the country that are going bankrupt right now.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and again, I agree. Here's the problem. Neither side is going to look good. And we were talking about this when I was on the air on Monday. If this gets to a point where we don't have, God forbid, any baseball, no one's going to care who was winning or who lost this fight or who looked right. Both sides are going to look bad. And that's why, and I think, Joe, you said this most eloquently in your smattering of radio appearances this week, is that, you know, there's too much to lose for both of these sides to not get a deal done. The thing that, gets me, and you were mentioning deferred payments, I thought some of the initial reporting had deferred payments kind of involved, and maybe that's just something that was leaked to reporters to be like, this is kind of where we think we're going to end up, but we're going to try and see how much we can get up front off the top, and then maybe make up deferred payments on the back end.
So I'm not sure, I honestly don't know if it was reported before this, but I remember just first seeing it on Sunday. I read it on Sunday in a Ken Rosenthal piece saying that there was deferred payments. And to me, it sounded like he was talking to sources from the player side where they would actually be on board with that.
Right.
I think. But it's, I mean, deferred payments just seems like a very logical solution.
Why would the owners not want that?
I don't know.
Having maybe to pay the money.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's ultimately
not to have to pay.
Yeah, that's ultimately what the owners are getting to by jumping out and being like, hey, the reason why they're jumping out in the public is, hey, we want to bring the sport back. Now, we're not actually going to pay them, you know, their fair value, but we want to get the sport back. So if these players will just suck it up and play for pennies on the dollar, then everybody will be fine and everybody will be happy. It's one of those, it is honestly, you know, somewhat genius of the owners to kind of take on this persona, especially when kind of getting back to what Joe said, no other league is talking about money, like trying to get the sport back. No one is talking about money at the forefront. That is, you know, down on the list, whereas Major League Baseball, that is numero uno. Like, before we can do anything, we have to figure out the money.
I did hear Dave O'Brien talking on his podcast about how deferred payments could really substantially affect free agent deals in the future if, you know, owners could say, because there's already been these rumors about collusion, about these owners getting together and not wanting, and trying to suppress salaries. And I think that those are more than just rumors. Like, those are legit stories that have happened. But if there's deferred payments, that would give even more reason for owners to try to suppress wages in that way, saying like, oh, look, we've got all these deferred payments we got to make. We can't offer this much to free agents that are coming down these next 2 or 3 years. So, I mean, there's going to be negative side effects from this for the players. I mean, like, this pandemic has created a huge deflationary effect within Major League Baseball. So, like, the financial structure of Major League Baseball was made in a period of great inflation where there's just like more dollars, right? And so, like, now that balloon has deflated, and that's what all this strife is coming from. It's like trying to figure out a way to now make it work, make this balloon float with less air in it. You know, it's like they got to do something, and it's happening all over the world. But like, the difference is that the government can actually inject money, that like they can just print treasury bonds and actually keep that balloon float, you know, keep air in it. But Major League Baseball is not in a position where they have that kind of backstopping. So there's going to need to be some hurt happening on both sides.
It almost seems to me like baseball is using the pandemic to address concerns that the owners have had for years, which is that salaries have been increasing. And
a market correction kind of thing?
Yes, exactly. And I feel like, you know, we always kind of wondered, you know, when the bubble would burst, you know, what would be too much? Like, would 10 years, $300 million be too much? Or would $400 million be too much? And you've seen these deals go out for you know, players of that caliber, you know, the Harpers, the Machados, and people of that nature. But now, I almost wonder if by just, again, you use the word collusion, Joe, I'm wondering if this is going to lead to the, you know, the capping artificially, or possibly in a way that would be more written down, but it might lead to the capping of these type of salaries.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely going to start seeing the forces of the market take place. You know, like player salaries have grown over the years because the natural market forces have made it that way. You know, like there's been more money, there's been more TV money coming into the game, more fans coming into the stadium, more fans spending more money when they're at the stadium. So all these things have positively affected player wage growth and things like that. And now we're going to see the opposite of that happen. We're going to see fans being tighter with their money. We're going to see companies who could potentially advertise with Major League Baseball maybe not wanting to do so as much. We might see, you know, these TV contracts come down. So we're just going to see natural market forces take place. And if you have deferred payments, you're going to see the effects of that happen stacked on top of some of these deflationary effects that we've talked about. So it's going to be difficult. Like, I really feel bad for players who are primed for like a huge free agent deal, and they'll still make a ton of money if they are deserving of so, but it's not going to be as much. Like, and it's not just in baseball. Like, soccer players are not going to be making as much money. I've talked to Darren Eales. We've talked to him in press conferences, and he's said as much that in the medium to short term, there's, you know, the transfer fees are not going to be as high as they've been, which have just been skyrocketing in recent years. Wages aren't going to be as high. It's going to happen in most sports. I think probably the NFL is a little bit more protected from these things because just the giant TV deals that they have in place, and they aren't as dependent on fans.
And they haven't had the season compromised the way some of these other leagues have at this point, to this point.
Yeah, yeah. And I think to a similar extent, like talking about soccer, because I mentioned it earlier, like you're still going to see the big Premier League teams, Barcelona, Real Madrid, like those teams are still going to have lots of money because they have such big global audiences. But in these more localized places, MLS, these South American countries are in actually a world of hurt. And I know I'm getting way off topic here, but it's just like we're going to see the natural force of the market have its effect on players. And it's going to be rough for them. Like, I just feel really bad for them.
Can I ask the somewhat uncomfortable question of, is this in a way sort of a good thing? Like, obviously not having to deal with
how dare you,
right? Obviously not having to deal with a pandemic. And it is, well, because I hate saying that because it comes off like, oh, I don't want players to make as much money as they can. Like, no, I am all for it. But as you were kind of alluding to, like, had we gotten to a point where it was a bit absurd, you know, these 10-year, $300 million contracts, but across all leagues, like, were we getting to such a gluttonous place of making money that we needed a little bit of a check to get back to reality and more feasible numbers? Like, I don't know. That's why I asked the question.
I think it's good because I think it, and again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm ruthless, but
I'm with
Having said that, here's the part of it. No, this is not a player thing. I think this is going to get to a point where we see more competitive balance because I think you're going to see owners who have no real interest of doing anything other than trying to make a profit off their sale and a profit off their team get out of the game because they can't operate under this particular atmosphere, and that you're probably going to see better competitive balance in Major League Baseball. And it's not going to be done by a salary cap. It's not going to be done by a revenue sharing structure. It's just going to be done by the fact of these guys just, you know, whether it's other businesses that they've gone through or just an inability to keep up with the Joneses, they're going to not want to do it. I think you're going to see some real turnover in ownership, not just in baseball, but in other sports, where you're going to have, I think, an infusion of owners that want to be in the game. And I think there are probably a lot of owners who really just kind of have the team as a little vanity plate,
sure,
you know, that kind of thing. So I feel like, you know, you might see, you know, like, for example, the Oakland ownership group just put out today that they're going to not pay their minor league players anymore.
But there's a key part of that. They're not going to pay their minor league players after the end of the month, but those players cannot go out and get new contracts. They're stuck making no money.
Right, and so because of that, you know, I feel like you're going to see more and more of those types of stories, and those are bad for public PR, and I feel like the stain of that, and I'll do this to connect something that Caleb said, although when I was on the air Monday, I attributed it to Joe. I apologize. But it's very important, I think, when you're in a situation where you have an owner who is a public face, when you have that, it is very, very hard to hide from criticism. And I'm not going to say anything about Mr. McGurk and the folks in the Braves and Liberty Media, but they are very, very easily hidden when it comes to any type of criticism because they can hide behind that corporate shield. But when you have other owners who are out there, and a lot of these owners, like we said, either have very little cash flow or are sitting in a situation where after the pandemic is over, they might not be in a good situation, I think they might be forced to sell. And I think that actually will create a better environment for baseball from a competitive balance standpoint and also from a salary standpoint.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I do think that it would actually – I think it would be a positive to see – new owners come in if that's the case, because that would mean that the owners that are getting out of the game have a reason to get out. They probably want to like cash out, you know. They may have other financial pressures, they may have other businesses they need to help support, and getting rid of the Major League Baseball team that they own is a way to do that. And I think that if you think about what kind of owner, what the mentality would be if you want to get into the sport right now, that would mean that you are probably very financially secure and
savvy.
Ambitious. Yeah, like you would be in a position where you want to actually move the club forward. So I think it would be a good sign to kind of see that kind of thing. There are obviously exceptions. I talk about soccer a lot, sorry. In Newcastle, like the Newcastle owner is trying to sell the team. And I think they had like an agreement in place, but it was with like a Saudi, like a
prince.
A prince, yeah, like someone in like government. So I don't want to see any.
Kind of like what the Mets had going on before that sale fell through, and now maybe we'll get an A-Rod and J-Lo partnership of owning the Mets. Now that would.
Well, he said he backed out. He said he backed out.
Oh, okay, I missed that.
He backed
Thank
out.
Goodness.
He backed out because I guess he. Because here's the thing, it takes so much money to buy the team, and then you have to be able to, you know, actually pay people, and he doesn't have enough.
Yeah, I think that's what people don't get when it comes to owning these teams, is it's like, no, it's not just that you have to be wealthy, it's that you have to be so extremely wealthy that you can essentially, you can pay all of these people and still go about your normal business, and like, who really has that, you know, I mean, one of the newest owners of the NBA, and it's weird to think about, but Michael Jordan, you know, like at one point, like he is one person, but he's had to make so much insane amount of money throughout, you know, Steve Ballmer with the Clippers and owning Microsoft and all that kind of thing, you know, like
Hell, Tillman Fertitta with the Rockets, he's going through a whole bunch of hell right now with no restaurants and casinos open.
Yeah, I think, and he's in the concert business, and so I'm curious to see. You know, I really haven't heard too many Major League Baseball owners suffer or like come out and talk about, yeah, we're going through a really tough time. Like we're just, I feel like we're hearing more these kinds of negotiations of paying the players than we are hearing about their own personal business.
Yeah, and we hear a lot about how these owners are getting extremely wealthy based on the way that the valuation of the ball clubs has increased drastically over the period of time of them owning the team. And that is true, but the value of the team is really only as valuable as how much someone will buy it for, right? And how much are these clubs, what is that number now in the wake of the pandemic? Like, what is that number that somebody else would theoretically come in and buy a team for? I don't know the answer to that, but it's surely lower than it would have been. And I'm not saying that these owners are like in bad shape, but there's a difference between having that free cash flow available and having the overall valuation of wealth, you know? And that's where I think that if you do a deferral payment scheme, you can actually you can leverage that valuation and that just general wealth and alleviate some of these free cash flow problems that some of these owners might be having.
Caleb, I know that you wanted to kind of take up specifically for the players. I know that you did that a little bit, but just from their perspective, I know that, and again, I said it earlier, that there are points that they are making granted, they're not doing it eloquently and they're not doing it in a way that favors them, but I know that, you had some thoughts about just where they sit in this whole mess.
Yeah, it's one of those Brett Anderson pitcher. I'm trying to think who he plays for. Blanked. But anyways, he tweeted out something that I did find interesting amongst the players discussing this. Is he was like, this is an interesting strategy of making the most marketable players potentially look like the bad guys. And I think that's rather interesting, is it does seem like this is the one league who are making their top paid players, their most marketable players, like Anderson's saying, look like the guys who are being, you know, so concerned with their money and everything that they're not in, you know, they're not concerned about the game. And, you know, that's what everyone wants, is the pure mm-hmm. game. And I did find that interesting, because it was like, yeah, this is the one league where, like, it seems like everyone else is kind of, you know, promoting their stars and trying to work with their stars. And, you know, because obviously, like, if the NBA were to come back and LeBron James says he's not playing, then you best believe Adam Silver is pumping the brakes on whatever they're doing and is going to go directly to LeBron and be like, hey, what can we do to get you to come back? Where it seems like Major League Baseball is taking the, oh, no, we're going to get you to come back because otherwise you look like a jerk. And we're already dealing with a league that doesn't have enough stars. Like, Major League Baseball does not have the stars when it pales into comparison to the NBA and the NFL. And so, like, you need to be making Mike Trout and Aaron Judge and guys like that and Bryce Harper happy, you know, like, mm-hmm. and want to come back to play, because that's what's going to boost your audience and boost eyeballs watching your game. And instead, it feels like we're doing the exact opposite.
I also think it has to do with the regionality that Major League Baseball has controlled. And, you know, you think about the way these other sports develop. You know, fantasy football has turned NFL into a superstars league. I think the highlight revolution when it comes to the NBA has turned that into a superstars league. So much of the fan spread over those sports is now superstar driven. It's not city driven as much anymore. Yes, there are Hawks fans in Atlanta, but there are also just as many people who are happy to see Steph Curry when the Golden State Warriors come to town, and Giannis when Milwaukee comes to town, and things of that nature. And it almost gets to a point where you know, you ask someone who they're playing tonight, oh, they're not playing the Milwaukee Bucks, they're playing Giannis, so they're not playing mm-hmm. the Rockets, they're playing Harden. There isn't that. And you know, Jerry Seinfeld used to do a bit where, you know, it's like, oh, we're rooting for laundry. Major League Baseball is one of the few sports where it feels like people are still rooting for laundry. And that's the way the owners, I think, are selling it when it comes to the interaction with their players. It's like, look, they're not coming to see you. They're coming to see the Braves or the Phillies. Like, no one's coming out to see, you know, Ronald Acuna specifically. And while I think a lot of people still believe that and believe that that's the case, I do think that there are issues when it comes to the way that Major League Baseball has marketed itself, and they're using that that departure from some of the rest to use it as a focal point in their negotiations.
It seems like it's working,
too. Interesting. Yeah, it is an interesting observation from Anderson. I'm not sure if it's like, I think I think he might be kind of mistaking the cause for the effect, or the effect for the cause, if for a famous Jack White song or White Stripes song. You know, there are some fundamental differences between baseball and basketball, just in the way that stars operate. Like, if you're a basketball star, you're providing way more value for the team, like way more production on the court or on the field of play for the team than a baseball player does, because in baseball you have a roster of 25 guys or 26 guys, as it would be this year, as opposed to, like, or you know, in pitchers, and you have got there, just the way that the game is played is much different than a basketball player can have way more influence over a game, right? So,
sure.
So there's that. And then there's also in basketball, you've got a salary cap. So you've got a lot of players in that league who are kind of on a similar level of pay. Like you've got a lot of players in these different tranches of wages, as to where in baseball, it seems like you've got a lot more disparity between, because there's no salary cap, these guys have really been able to use the market to get the biggest salaries possible. So you've got these guys who make tons of money versus guys who make much, much less. And for baseball to be able to cut wages the way that they need to, or the way that they're saying they need to be able to operate, those guys who make those huge amounts of money just have to have their pay cut substantially. Otherwise, the only other way you can do it is by cutting pay more substantially from guys who make not as much money. So, but it is interesting. I think, I think his point is right that it has negative ramifications on the star players and how they can kind of market the game around those players.
We are obviously looking towards whatever type of resolution this is. What and when? I'll start with you, Caleb. What happens and when does it happen in terms of a resolution?
I mean, it seems like we're driving to a head. Like we're getting to a point where, I think Joe said this in our group chat yesterday, it was kind of like, now we're getting into the tinkering of negotiations where instead of just bringing out an entirely different new plan, we're tuning fine points of, hey, you know, don't take 30% of our prorated salary, you know, maybe exchange that, or maybe go for the deferred payments thing. You know, we're changing those little points. So hopefully we're a couple of weeks away. I am of the opinion that if we do not start baseball in order to kick off the season July 4th, like, you know, has been thrown out there, then I think we start to hit a whirlwind of issues and if, but, when kind of thing. I think really both sides should be working in mind that we are in some sort of spring training 2 weeks before July 4th. Otherwise, you know, we've got big problems. So we're working within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I hope we have just like a platform that these two sides can both stand on at the same time and work out a deal. Like, you just hope that this proposal gives them just some kind of baseline to work off of, which the 50-50 revenue split never was, right? Like, that was something that was just never going to happen. So that's the reason why this proposal may give some more optimism. I mean, we still have not seen how the players have officially reacted to this. We know that there's been a lot of bluster about them being livid or greatly discouraged, or however they want to phrase it, in reports. But the hope now for me is that there is actually a counter proposal made by the players and not just a flat out rejection. A flat out rejection would be kind of the worst case scenario here.
I think we have something by a week from now, because if you think about the timing, you need a 2 week spring training, but I think you also need that 2 week period to try and, okay, get everybody acclimated and get everybody down there. You see some of these universities with some of the plans that they're coming back. I know Clemson said that they want, you know, a 7 day quarantine where they're at, and then a 7 day quarantine on the Clemson campus, just to use that as an example. I think that baseball is going to try to hope for something similar. And so I feel like, you know, we always talk about how deadlines spur action. I think the deadline for this is somewhere in the neighborhood of like a June 5th or 6th. And I feel like that's kind of the imaginary date. You know, the end of, say, next week would be like the imaginary date to kind of be there. Because it's not like, you know, we have an agreement and like tomorrow people are going to start flying. Like it's there needs to be some sort of lead time and wrap up time. And I really think they want to get that July 4th date because of the optics of playing baseball on the 4th of July. We had the first time in our country not having Memorial Day games since like the 1880s.
Yeah.
So if that happens on the 4th of July, even if they get a deal done at some point, people are going to look at that and say, wow, these guys really couldn't get this done to where you have probably the most patriotic, visible symbol of our American consciousness, and you can't put baseball on this day because of things like money. Like that part of it, to me, I feel like they need that more than anything. You, Joe, wanted to talk a little bit about Mike Fulton-Nevich.
I did. I wanted to just talk some baseball in general.
Yeah, you know, like actual players.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's so funny. We've been doing this show now for weeks, and it's like we hardly get to talk about actual baseball. Because it is harder to even think about, right? Like,
right.
You don't want to like be thinking about baseball, and then the rug gets pulled out from under you.
Right.
But I'm starting to feel recently like we're at a point where we can start thinking about it a little more, thinking about the nuts and bolts of how the Braves are going to work this season. But yeah, like I actually just thought about this when I was flipping through. Well, actually, let me take it back. So like a few weeks ago, I had gone back and just decided to rewatch that first inning of Game 5 of the NLDS against the Cardinals last year, just to kind of see how it went. I think I came across, it was I went back and watched the John Boy cut up of it, and I watched that, felt bad for Mike Fulton-Nevich about what happened to him in that inning. Didn't get a lot of calls from the home plate umpire. Compounded on top of that was some defensive mistakes. Freddie Freeman made a very uncharacteristic one. Of course, we know now what he was going through at the time, which almost surely affected that. Like, just the confluence of things that went into making that making that inning what it was, right? And then just a few days ago, I was in the office at 92.9 The Game, and there was the Sports Illustrated season preview, baseball season preview in there. So I started flipping through. I went to the Braves page, obviously, to see what they were saying about it. And they were like going through the rotation, and Mike Fulton-Nevich, they were talking about as being like a guy that could very likely be sent down to the minors or traded if he like didn't get off to a rip-roaring start to the season. And I just think that the second half of his year last year just completely, it is like totally forgotten because of the way that the season ended, obviously, and the fact that what really made a bigger imprint on people last year was how bad the first half of the season was, which was bad. But people need to remember that he had an injury in spring training that didn't allow him to pitch in spring training, so he was trying to get healthy during the season, and then we saw the ramifications of that. But after he came back from Gwinnett, he had a 2.65 ERA, was 9-1. I mean, say what you want about win-loss record, probably it does not matter. But in 10 starts, he was 9-1 with a 2.65 ERA. I mean, like, he was so good. I think he was the Braves' best pitcher down the back half of the season last year. And I just have, like, I think he's going to be a huge part of the Braves' rotation this year. Like, I think he's going, I said, I think on Andy and Randy a while back that he would, like, be my bold prediction was that he would kind of be the Braves' best pitcher this year. And I don't think it's the most likely thing to happen, but I think that I would still stand by that bold prediction.
You know, You saying that about Fulton-Nevich and about the fact that a lot of people's opinions on him are kind of based on what they last saw of him kind of reminds me of another guy that's in Atlanta right now, but he's playing for the Falcons, is AJ Terrell, the corner. In this past year's national championship game, you know, AJ Terrell got torched by some of the best wide receivers in college football at LSU, but that's the lasting memory that a lot of people had of him.
Right.
And so it was interesting when we heard a lot about the Falcons going through their draft preparation, that a lot of people had bad things to say about Terrell based on the national championship game. But it's like, well, you can't throw out the other games in this season that, you know, he was so impressive and just a really skilled player. And I feel like the same is true for Fulton-Nevich. Now, you saying that he is going to be the best pitcher in that rotation, just, I mean, are we not giving Soroka enough credit for the way that he pitched last year? I mean, honestly, I think John Chuckery, who works with us at 92.9, I think his head's going to explode if we get a season and Mike Soroka is not the number one pitcher on this rotation and the number one pitcher when we head to the playoffs.
I love Mike Soroka. I couldn't tell you how many times last year where I was like keeping track to see if he was going to have a Maddux, which is a complete game under 100 pitches last year. Like, I think he's fantastic, and I think he's going to be a great pitcher for a long, long time because of what he's got between his ears. Like, I think he's just got the total right mindset. And I think that, honestly, that's maybe one thing that holds Mike Fulte back a little bit is between the ears.
But I guess the thing that I have with Fulte is, to me, he's not the best pitcher in that rotation, but he is maybe the face of that rotation because Mike Soroka is a very reserved guy. He's not going to say a lot, which kind of reminds me of at least what I remember of Greg Maddux.
Yeah.
Maybe Fultonevich being more of that in-your-face Tom Glavine type of guy who, whether it's the wristband thing that got so much attention or just the fact that he wears his emotions on his sleeve, and we got to read about those stories, like him driving in the car with his wife, headed to go play for Gwinnett, and just, the tearjerker kind of story that was. So I feel like maybe he's more of the face, but at least in my opinion, I don't believe he's going to be the best pitcher in that rotation.
So I don't think I think the most likely thing is that Mike Soroka is the best pitcher in the rotation, but it is my bold prediction.
Okay.
So it's not the most likely thing to happen, but I do think it is within the realm of possibility. And I want to know if you guys have a bold prediction for the season. I'm going to put you guys on the spot here, and
I do want to say one thing about Fulte real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I don't know if it's the rubber band thing or if it's what happened in the NLDS, but he just has this stigma against him as this mentally weak guy, and I really don't know where that came from. Like, is that just a commonly understood thing?
Yeah, well, and I think Joe can kind of attest to this. I only got to talk to him once last season. Joe, obviously, more than I did, but he doesn't seem like that in person.
He gets very emotional. Like, I remember, like, earlier in the season when he was having some of those bad games, he was, like, on the verge of tears after those games. And it's like, it's things like that. You love the passion, right? but sometimes you just kind of need to be a little bit calmer. And you can kind of see that demeanor happen on the mound sometimes. He starts, like, getting real fidgety. Finicky. With the glove. Yeah, he's kind of like, it's like he's running on too low of a gear. It's like the revs, he's like redlining. And I think that at one point last year, Brian Snicker, it was hilarious. I almost started busting out laughing during the middle of a press conference or a press scrum. He was like, he was talking about how Fulte got real hot during a start, and not like hot like temper, but just like his body was physically overheating. And so, and like some reporter was like, how'd you know that? And he was like, yeah, I just saw he was real red.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I think that was towards the end of the season, like heading into the playoffs, because I remember there was a real big question of where he was going to kind of fall in the rotation, because I don't know that it was a day game, but it was something
I think it was a day game, and we went and talked to Mike after we had talked to Snicker, and he had said that, and like he had talked about how he needed to be like more hydrated or something for day games.
Yeah, but I do remember because that was kind of the topic of whoever the broadcasters were. I mean, it was probably Chip, but that they kept putting a camera on Fulte, and his hat was real soaked in the brim of his cap. It was sweat falling down. Yeah, and I just remember, because he was really red, and it made you think, like, was he kind of overheating a bit because of not only, not exactly having a great game, but also just the natural heat. And then I think Snicker ended up pulling him a little bit earlier than people expected, and I think that was kind of what led to that discussion. When it comes to, though, Joe, your bold predictions or whatever, I thought there was going to be a pretty easy one out there that now, because we've had all of this time off, I've become a bit concerned. But I thought that Felix Hernandez was going to jump up the Braves rotation and become, and just based on his skill kind of coming back a little bit from those, you know, probably what, 2015 in Seattle or something like that. And also based on the fact that he's a veteran and Brian Snicker loves veterans and loves guys who have spent some time in the league, I thought he was going to jump up the rotation to like maybe in like the third spot just throughout the season and kind of surprise people, and not necessarily because anyone was struggling, but just because that Felix was going to end up being just so solid based on the spring that he had. But who knows now? I think Andy's kind of taken it to air and talked about the fact that, you know, Felix is a little bit of a bigger guy, and so hopefully we're not snacking too much and going to have a problem.
Well, I am like just really curious about specifically about how he and Cole Hamels will be able to perform after this long layoff. That's so, you know, those guys have been doing this for so long. They've got their routines and they've got their kind of circadian rhythms of like how the season goes, right, and how their body reacts to certain times and temperatures and all these things that they've gone through over the last 15 years just pitching season time and time again. So it will be interesting to see how those guys bounce back.
You guys were talking about quirky pitchers. I was going to take up for Mark the Bird Fidrich, who was always known for talking to the baseball, but he only had 29 career major league victories. But had nothing to do with his quirkiness. It was more because injuries and things of that nature. Although he was a two-time All-Star and an American League Rookie of the Year. There's that.
I like talking to the baseball. There's something very spiritual about that I like. I like quirky. I like players who do different things, who like have their ways of...
But that's the thing. Is Fulte quirky or is Fulte mentally weak? Like, that's... I'm okay with quirky.
Yeah, see, I don't buy into the idea that Fulte is mentally weak. I buy into the fact that he quite literally wears his emotions on his sleeve, and maybe that's the... I think him doing that is partly what makes him such a great pitcher, but then in the same aspect can make him struggle so much, is because that gets into his head, and if he starts struggling, then, you know, he's essentially talking to himself, like, come on, like, figure it out, you know, kind of thing. I see him as a guy who maybe if there weren't cameras on him, you know, would be like physically punching himself, like, you know, figure it out, or taking that rubber band that he wears and kind of popping his wrist, like, come on, man.
You make him sound like he's gonna be plucking his own eyebrows or something like that.
I do think that what he went through last year was like a huge moment of growth for him, in kind of being able to channel a lot of that emotion. Like he's talked about it. I would highly recommend anybody going back. He talked with Dave O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty for like over an hour on their podcast over on The Athletic. I recommend anybody going over and checking that one out. But I mean, like, he was just so down in the dumps, you know, when something like that's the lowest point of his career. And sometimes it takes those low points in your life, and not just like for Mike Foldynewicz, but for anybody, that sends you then on a trajectory upward where you take your failings and you learn from those mistakes, and it makes you a better person, a better player, like whatever the situation is. And I just think that we are going to see that from Foldynewicz. I think we're going to see see the arm talent gel a lot more with like a more mature person.
My bold prediction for 2020 for the Braves when baseball comes back is we're not going to be talking about Austin Riley and Johan Camargo. We're not going to be talking about not having Josh Donaldson. We're going to be talking about the fact that Marcell Ozuna had a very key impact on the lineup in multiple ways. Number one, he's batting behind Freddie Freeman, so you're seeing better pitches. But if you think about the fact that he had the kind of effect on Giancarlo Stanton that helped him get that big mega deal to the New York Yankees. Giancarlo had his best season with Ozuna batting behind him, had more than 30 home runs, I think 116 RBIs, and Ozuna had a pretty good season back in his own right. He didn't really have a lot of protection when he was in St. Louis, and because of that, I think you saw his numbers, especially his power numbers, drop. I think those are going to get really inflated now, especially when you think about what's in front of Freddie and also the fact that he's behind him. I think that I'm not going to say he's going to make people forget about them not signing Josh Donaldson, but I think you're going to see the impact in Freddie's numbers, his own numbers, and I think he lengthens the lineup, I think, in a way that you probably weren't sure Josh Donaldson could have going into this season, especially thinking about the type of decline that people expected from him going into this season.
Yeah, that's a good call. A couple things on that, and I want to credit John Chuckery from our station, 929 The Game, for saying this. Keep an eye on Freddie Freeman's walks this year. I think the amount of walks that Freddie Freeman will get will be telling as to how willing pitchers are to face Ozuna, like how effective he is going to be at making contact. And that's his biggest problem, right? It's like he's got to put the ball in play, which he didn't do as much last year, and hopefully he does more this year. I think if he does, you know, he has the potential, if he can repeat that his best season that he did that he had with the Marlins, I mean, then I think the Braves are getting an absolute steal. I also want to say how kind of fortunate, when we think about the current situation that Major League Baseball is in, how fortunate are the Braves that they didn't do a four-year deal for Josh Donaldson at a high number, and the fact that they got Ozuna and Cole Hamels on one-year deals. So after, you know, after this year, they don't have that money kind of dragging behind them like a dead weight, you know.
They could renegotiate with those guys for more one-year deals.
They could, but just generally, the Braves, I think, they just don't have money tied up, so they will be able to react to the conditions of the market that will make contracts a lot cheaper in free agency. Like, we're not going to see the free agent deals we've seen in the past. We're going to see much cheaper deals, and hopefully the Braves have the cash available and are willing to spend enough to be able to capitalize on the situation they have found themselves in.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, toot my own horn, but I think it was our second podcast that we did that I did say, I think now, because of coronavirus, I think the Braves will be looked at, and specifically Double A will be looked at, as really smart, really savvy for not signing Donaldson and going after the one-year deals. Personally, and this is just maybe this is more of my bold prediction I should have said earlier, I think we'll be looking at the one-year deal of Cole Hamels and crossing our fingers, wishing it to be over. But maybe it's a personal thing too. I've never liked the guy. He played for the Phillies, so I always like to root against him. And I don't have a lot of faith in him. I don't think that it was like a $30 million deal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not that high.
It was like 18.
Yeah. Okay. 18. There we go. But yeah, I think it was one of those that not that the Braves will necessarily regret, but it was just like, whoo. Glad that one-year deal is over.
We still don't even really know what his physical condition is, you know? Like, last time we heard from him, he was hurt. So, also, who knows how he's going to come back?
You just don't like that he has a little boy haircut. It's okay.
No, well, he has a punchable face. That's what it is. Andy and Randy talk a lot about guys who have punchable faces. He's got one, and I'm sorry. And I want to punch it. It is what it is.
I think we've shouted out more hosts from our radio station on this show than any podcast we've done.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say that, because I said something about Chuckery earlier, then Joe threw out Chuckery, and I was in my head, like, I hear a scenario where John Chuckery is complaining about Cole Hamels and the $18 million that the Braves gave him. But on the other hand, I will kind of piggyback on the idea that the Marcell Ozuna deal will end up being a good deal. Also, for the fact of, at least to my understanding, I mean, he is going to be the DH, right? Like, we're going to have probably Nick Markakis out in the field or some kind of platoon.
Maybe vice versa, honestly. I feel like, you know.
See, I feel like they would want Ozuna just at the plate, and they would want Markakis' glove out in the field, but.
I don't know. I think you know, we've talked a lot about the DH kind of being settled because now you can get at bats for Riley and Camargo. I think we're going to see a little bit more rotation of who is in the DH spot than people are expecting right now. I do think that the Braves will try to get Austin Riley as many at bats as possible, so I think that we may see him playing in the outfield a little bit. We may see him play third base at times. And I think that the Braves have lots of options that they can kind of cycle through that DH. So I think that it's a perfect opportunity to try to, you know, get some guys some rest, because we know that it's going to be probably even more of a compressed schedule than a normal baseball season would be, which is already, you know, pretty you know, you're playing every day. So I think that it's going to be rotating around a little bit more than people have been talking about. But I do think that it does serve the Braves to try to get at Riley as consistent at bats as possible, as long as it's obviously not a detriment to the team.
Either one of you guys wanting to fight for the end of National League Baseball as we know it, with no pitcher hitting, maybe beyond next season, yes, if possible?
Yes. I'm sorry. I think I said this last week. It's one of those. I love the stories of getting to see Bartolo Colon knock one out of there. I love Madison Bumgarner getting up there and looking like he belongs in the lineup at bat. But there are so, so many bad pitchers at the plate, and we know, oh, there's an out, or, you know, there's a bathroom break coming up, or yep, he's gonna lay down the bunt, and is he going to screw it up, kind of thing. That I think, for the benefit of the game, that, yeah, I'm ready for it.
I hate that I'm siding the way Caleb is going, because I heard you talking about this, Will, over the weekend, and I'm kind of the same way. It's like, I love the dynamic of having to manage around having a guaranteed out in your lineup, but at the same time, it's like, man, it's such a drag when you see, like, you got guys on base and the pitcher's coming up, or, like, you know, the eighth guy's getting walked because the pitcher's coming up next and it's going to end the inning, you know, like, things like that. Is just, it's a major drag, like you, and like Caleb said, it's like, yeah, it's time to go get a hot dog or something.
It's one of those things that a lot of people who will talk about strategy and scenarios that could have happened in the game that is now going away. You know, when we got rid of the four pitch walk, where now there's just a signal shown. Well, now we missed the opportunity for a wild pitch bringing in a run. So sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which we have seen, but more times than not, we just wasted time while a pitcher threw four balls way outside. And, you know, in order to speed up the game, it was kind of like, well, we don't need to see that every time. In the same respect, it's one of those, yes, will we miss out on opportunities of something crazy? I keep bringing up Bartolo, but it's because of the fact that the dude swung the bat and knocked his own helmet off. Like, he was an embarrassment at the plate, but one time he finally connected with the ball and sent it into the stands. Sure, we'll miss out on those opportunities, but I think we will get more opportunities where having that DH influences the game more in a positive way, brings more offense, mm-hmm. and will make each individual game more watchable. I mean, just how many great DHs do we have, or have we had in the past in the American League that have, you know, they've made the game more enjoyable?
Stars, yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the four pitch walk, or the intentional walk. I remember just back to an old Braves game when they were playing the Mets, and Armando Benitez threw a wild pitch on an intentional walk, and the Braves blew that chance in that game late. It was like the ninth inning or whatever, and they ended up blowing the chance in the inning, and then the Mets ended up winning it in the 10th on like a walk-off single by Ray Ordonez. I mean, that's the kind of crap that's infuriating for a lot of people.
It seemed like it happened kind of, it like ramped up where like all of a sudden you were starting to see more and more pitchers like incapable of throwing the intentional walk. You know, right. It's kind of like how, you know, like some pitchers like cannot throw the ball to first base or whatever.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
Some just like could not hit the pitcher's
John Lester.
Trying to throw that way. Yeah.
John Lester was one that with the Red Sox, he never would throw because, you know, it was never on target. And I think it was the year that he played with the Cubs that they won the World Series, that it was him picking somebody off that was such a big deal.
Well, you know, the character in Major League 2 Rube Baker, the guy who the catcher who can't throw the ball back to the pitcher. He's based off a real guy. He's based off of Mackie Sasser.
Jared Saltalamacchia was another one.
Yeah, Jared Salty. Yeah,
yeah, he was one that couldn't throw it back to the pitcher. He'd airmail it over his head. And so, like, we still have those opportunities to happen, you know.
I'm glad you mentioned
lots of shenanigans.
You know, me talking about that earlier this week, Joe. Yeah, about 3 years ago, I would have been a pitcher hitting for himself stand, but I don't have the energy, and I also, when you think about the fact that they're the only league in all of baseball, professional or amateur, that doesn't use a DH anymore, yeah. It's very, very hard to take up for it. So I think it's going to go by the wayside. You know,
just
Bob
done fighting the fight, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've exhausted all the bullets.
It's also,
put the sword in me.
It's just been the. It's been the. Yeah, serenity now. It's always
give me a,
been.
Give
just,
me a soldier's death.
It's been the weirdest
Gladiator.
Thing that. To have a sport where both leagues don't play with the same rules. Like, it's just, it's so strange. It's honestly, it's one of those things. It took a friend of mine who is not a baseball person at all. He is a big time football guy. My buddy Joey sitting with me at a game and just debating with me where I at that point was kind of going with, well, no, this is the norm. Like, this is what we've always done. Da 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 kind of thing. And then it's like, but you're playing with two separate sets of rules, yeah. So how like, are we even? You know,
it's like what if like the NFC played with 10 players on the field instead of 11?
Sure.
You know,
yeah, or you know, or like the NFL right now is dealing with the onside kick versus 4th and 15 kind of thing. What if the NFC was onside kick and you know the AFC was 4th and 15? To you know, it's like. It feels like one side, obviously, is benefited more than the other, and so it's so bizarre, especially when it used to always be that the National League had better pitchers, but I don't necessarily think that is the case, so why not play with even rules and just, obviously, more offense? I want more offense.
My only reticence, again, is I would want a year's worth of lead time, just so you're not putting this
sure.
and usurping this on a team in an off season where they have to go find a guy and they're at a disadvantage where basically, you know, the only thing they're really using the DH for is to give like a day off to their catcher or something like that. Like I would want to have a year's worth of lead time to go out and actually develop or have somebody who can play that position who could actually be a contributor at that position. That'd be my only real reticence to it. Did you guys see the tweet that was floating around about the batting stances? Like, which batting stance would you emulate?
Yes. Yep.
All right.
And I've got one. When you sent that over, I immediately knew.
Same.
All right. I'll start with you, Joe. Go ahead.
Gary Sheffield.
Okay.
Yep.
That was one that was okay. Cocking yeah. the bat. You know, you couldn't actually do it with like an actual heavy bat, but if you had like a... We would play like home run derby with those little like souvenir bats.
Oh yeah.
And so that was always fun to do it with. I could not pull it off in like an actual like little league game, but
who's
it was
yours,
more of like
Caleb?
A front yard baseball type of thing.
So I feel like the want was to always have that crazy wide stance, you know, with the bat cocked up. But when you sent this to us, it was kind of like, who did you try to be like? I went from, well, who did I try to have a batting stance like? And then who did I end up having a batting stance like? And when I actually played, I was much more like an Ichiro in the plate. Just
really?
Very stiff and upright. Yeah, it's one of those... When I was thinking back about that, it was like, yeah, I very much was more condensed and upright playing myself, you know, versus I'm trying to think now. I'm blanking on a name. Who was it that used to go from one side of the box to the other? It was just Hunter Pence.
Yes,
that's who it was. That
he almost,
you know,
has like he almost has like the softball. Stance mm-hmm. kind of where he's running up to it.
Yeah, it was one of those where I think he had to shorten it a little bit because it got so ridiculous where he was outside of the box that he had to shorten it a little bit. But I feel like, you know, backyard baseball kind of thing, that was it, to try to make that strike zone as small as possible when you're playing. But yeah, as far as when I took a shot at you know, trying to play baseball as a kid, even up and through being a freshman in high school, very much more Ichiro and uptight and condensed and very bad. I was a very bad baseball player. That's why I'm yeah, thankful I get to talk about either. It now.
I feel somewhat guilty with my answer, because my answer is an Atlanta villain. And this is coming from somebody who despises the New York Yankees. Like, I despise the New York. Like, I wouldn't date a woman because she was a New York Yankee fan, because she was trying to get me to wear a Yankee hat. She was trying to make me put on a Yankee hat in a store, like in a Lids, to see what it would look like. And I'm like, no, I would not do this. I would if I'm sitting there and I'm unemployed and the New York Yankees called me, I would sooner rather pledge my allegiance to Satan than work for the New York Yankees. Like, that's what it is.
For those listening, we're also watching each other on Google. I can see the blood vessels popping out of Will's neck as he's talking about this.
So the point is, the player, and again, unintentionally, the player that I unintentionally had like a batting stance of was an Atlanta villain, and it was Jim Leyritz. Like, I had the real twirl. I love to twirl the bat. I used to, you know, I had very with the feet. My feet were very busy, so like I was a pest in the plate. Like at the plate, like that. I would twirl it around like that.
Did you have like the toe tap going?
Oh yeah, I was a toe tap. I had wide feet. I had everything going.
That's always been my thing, is that I couldn't move. Like, if I was doing something else, that was always going to throw off my swing.
Like, I basically was in there like I was walking on coals. I was just like, you know, I was twirling the bat. I had my feet were happy. I was a coach's nightmare. I couldn't do anything right. And again, I did it to very little effectiveness, but that was just how I was comfortable, you know, standing in the box. But yes, Jim Leyritz, hate the Yankees, but yet that was basically the stance that I emulated completely unintentionally.
Well, if the New York Yankees or Yes Network want to hire me, I will gladly take that job. I mean, I absolutely hate the Yankees, but I've had this discussion with friends that work in the business before, that if your nemesis team came calling, you know, if the New Orleans Saints needed a broadcaster and they called me, yes, like I'm just without hesitation, come on, a job's a job. But I guess, Will, you're a little more passionate and just can't do it.
Can't stand the Yankees.
I think it's his girlfriend. I think it's this former girlfriend.
Yeah, called. I know.
Some bad blood there.
The vivid memory of she tried to place a hat on my head.
Wouldn't do it. It wasn't even a girlfriend. It was someone who was petitioning to be a girlfriend.
Oh.
It was dropped.
Oh, so did Will get spurned and then that has brought about the hate?
That's not true. That's definitely not true. This is totally a decision. It was my decision.
Okay.
Not hers. It's totally my decision to her. I don't know if we have enough time to get into this just because we've gone so long, but did we want to talk about Bob Nightingale saying that we might have a realignment at the end of the 2021 season? He said that maybe the Braves would be in some sort of like they would realign the Easts, where like the NL side would be a more of a Northeast division and then the AL side would be a Southeast division or vice versa, and that the Braves would be in a division with the two Florida teams and maybe the Phillies and or Cincinnati or Washington.
Is this moving forward or just for this season?
He says it's been a part of the 2021 CBA negotiations and been a part for things for a while because of the fact that you have more teams in this region, that it would make more sense to have them, you know, to minimize travel, be in the same division.
I'd take that as a bunch of smoke. I don't know. I personally wouldn't put much stock into it just for the pure fact of there's so many other things that they're trying to worry about right now, that to throw that in there, especially how passionate that the Braves stance has been, I think they would Now, obviously, I think under this conversation...
let's get Terry McGurk's opinion on this.
Yeah, I think under this conversation, like, the Braves aren't moving divisions, but changing teams and things of that nature. I think unless you're bringing in new teams and need realignment, I don't... You know, like, back when the Braves were playing in the West kind of thing. You know, like, unless you're... You're dealing with that kind of thing. I don't think they're going to be realigning any teams.
Yeah, I was very surprised when you brought it up. I even had to ask him on a follow up. Be like, Bob, you piqued my interest there. Like what the f? You know? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I wonder if he was just spitballing. I don't like. I was listening because I was working that day. I was in a side production studio. I was just like, what did he just say?
Exactly.
Well, it's one of those, Bob, you ran out of stuff to write about, and now you're just going to kind of throw something out there that everyone goes,
hey, man, that's
what?
Bob. That's my guy. Don't get on my guy.
No.
He's a good guy.
No, I mean, look, he's a valuable source of information.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you got to put food on the table. And so when things get a little rough, you're like, hey, let's throw out this scenario. Because I feel like my brain doesn't go to making up scenarios or just kind of seeing, like, I wonder if this possibility would exist. But for guys that their brain does operate that way, I mean, it's interesting. I just don't think it's something that Major League Baseball is going to bite on.
Bob, by the way, said today, there is no hard deadline, but if the two sides reach an agreement by about June 6th, their season could still start by July 4th. I believe one of us said that during this podcast.
When is June 6th?
That's today. Next Friday.
Today's
next Friday.
27th.
That's next Friday from when we've recorded.
It's Wednesday. I mean, we need.
Thank you, Apple Watch.
Yes, we need.
That is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
We need Aaron Judge carrying an American flag running out in the outfield, kind of like we need. That moment recreated with this July 4th date. That's why I've always said if we push it beyond that, then we can't bring in the patriotic aspect, which is just deeply ingrained into the game.
Get Mike Piazza out there hitting a celebratory kickoff home run.
You keep using that damn line, the Mike Piazza celebratory home run.
It's because of the 9/11 thing.
What is your freaking beef with that? That was a great moment.
It's my bit, and I'm sticking with my bit.
It's definitely a bit for you.
But it
I've
is
heard
also
you say that
just,
no less than five times.
It is stamped into people's brains when it comes to there was this major tragedy.
Yeah.
Now we've got a new major tragedy, even though obviously not in the same respect, you know, not terrorism, but a virus that's affected so many people that were, when the game gets back, especially if we can do it on July 4th and bring in that patriotism aspect into it, we're going to have a player or a moment that is just stamped into our brain. And so, I mean, that's, you know, Piazza was that for 2001.
It's going to be Austin Riley hitting a walk-off home run.
No.
No, no. What if it's
who would be like the most Americana player to
Charlie Culberson? Charlie Culberson hits a walk off grand slam off Sean Doolittle, and the Braves beat the Nationals. That'd be awesome.
Well, see, like, can I? I almost want to like sprinkle in a little. What if it was Acuna? What if it was someone who's not naturally. A English-speaking person, you know, to kind of, hey, that's 2020. That's
that'd be fun, too.
You
know? Yeah. That'd be fun, too.
I think it'd be good.
Well, this got weird, as we always does. Thank you guys, as always, and thank you for listening. Again, you can download the Batter Up podcast on radio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it and also be looking for our next podcast, which will come within a week's time. If we do get, again, some sort of agreement, we will come back and do an emergency podcast, and Joe is going to wake everybody up at 3 o'clock in the morning when that happens, and basically putting you in charge of that one, Joe.
It's the dream.
Thank you guys so much for listening. For Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson, I'm Willie P. saying so long, and thanks for listening to Batter Up, a radio.com, a 92.9 The Game exclusive.